from the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, true ghost stories. Get ready for a couple hours of some campfire stories. Here's what's happening. Oh, when Mother Nature does what she does, or he, look out. I guess Mother Nature would be a she. Georgia ramped up its state of emergency as crews organizing the cleanup from the weekend's deadly storms. They're asking for additional aid. The governor, Nathan Deal, out there expanded his emergency declaration to include 9 additional counties in southern Georgia. The declaration frees up state resources to assist storm victims who just got battered. 20 people dead, most of them in Georgia, and a number injured, too. Jeez. Supermarket operator Kroger said it would fill 10,000 positions this year, joining a list of companies that have publicized routine hiring plans as President Donald Trump puts pressure on companies to employ more U.S. workers. 2 Republican senators unveiled one of the first Obamacare replacement bills of the new Congress, a plan they admit is imperfect, but they describe it as a tangible start to overhauling the 2010 health care law on a bipartisan basis. Making good on a campaign promise, President Trump signed an executive order withdrawing the United States from the very controversial Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal, the TPP. He also signed 2 other orders, one placing a hiring freeze on some federal workers and the other reinstating a ban on funding for international groups that perform abortions. He has hit the deck running. Let's check in with Jerome Corsi, of course, who writes for WND.com and was at the inauguration. Jerry, he's really working fast, isn't he?
No question, George. The Trump White House is off to a fast start, and I think it's going to be a fast 100 days, a lot accomplished. And Trump seems very determined to stick to his campaign promises and to deliver on what seems to be an extraordinary number of those promises.
Jerry, I want to get your reaction to some of the national cable outlets that have been just doing stories after stories about how many people were in attendance at the inauguration, how many people were not there. I mean, what's going on here with media coverage these days? Who cares?
I think that's a very important point, George. You've got a mainstream media and a media that had supported Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama that just won't accept legitimacy of Donald Trump's presidency. And these stories are invented to be diversions, undermining the legitimacy of Trump's presidency, saying all the attendance was very small. I mean, I've been to many inaugurations, and the attendance was, you know, within a margin of error of previous inaugurations. The whole area in front of the Capitol was absolutely filled, and even in the rain, people were out there enthusiastically and in huge numbers.
Well, I'd rather be in the comfort of my home anyway and watch it that way.
And you could do it in addition to television by live streaming, and that added to the number of people, the millions on television. And I think the White House is right. This was the most watched inauguration ever. And I would expect that to continue, because with the continuing availability of media on the Internet and the various ways of watching live events, I think people watching events like the inauguration in their homes is only going to increase.
And what I don't get, though, Jerry, is, you know this program. We're basically very positive about many things. We call it the way we see it. Let's give the guy a chance to do what he has to do. If he screws up, we're going to be talking about it. You will. You'll be writing about it on WND. You're not an apologist for anybody. And we'll be talking about it. But I just don't get the fact that the media, some of these networks, that's all they do is pick out the negative in everything that happens.
Well, you know, George, first of all, I think there are millions of people who wanted Hillary Clinton to win. And obviously, in any election, there's going to be millions of people who voted for a candidate that did not win. And those people legitimately can feel disappointed and should work to the next election. to correct that problem, to win the next time. But to have a media that is dead set to only report negative news or to undermine the credibility with marginal stories or invented stories, as the mainstream media seems determined to do right now with Donald Trump, I think only further marginalizes the mainstream media. I'm in the process, George, of applying for White House to be a White House correspondent, and I expect to have that established within the next 30 days.
All right. Well, you'll be phoning in a lot of reports then on our program, Jerry.
Look forward to it, as always, George.
Thanks,
thank you.
Friend. Jerry Corsi writes for WND.com. An actor was killed while filming a scene featuring several guns for an Australian band's music video. The man died at a bar in Queensland, the city of Brisbane, while filming the video by a hip-hop group called Bliss and Esso. Members of the band were not on the set at the time. During the scene, several actors fired their guns, and the actor somehow received wounds to his chest. Bread, chips, and potatoes should be cooked to a golden yellow color rather than dark brown to reduce the intake of a chemical which could cause cancer, according to a government food scientist. They're warning people about this, so take heed. The chemical is produced when starchy foods are roasted, fried, or grilled for too long at high temperatures. And the official title of the Star Wars Episode 8 is Star Wars: The Last Jedi. The next chapter in the massively popular space saga is the sequel to the 2015's mega blockbuster Star Wars: The Force Awakens, which made more than $2 billion worldwide. New research published by a global team of researchers focusing on 11,000 relatively nearby galaxies, asking why their gas, their lifeblood for the formation of new stars, is being violently stripped away on a widespread scale. The answer, according to these scientists, relates to the great halos of dark matter thought to be surrounding the galaxies, and that paints a picture of these galaxies falling through these large halos and just disappearing. That's kind of scary. What else is going on in the skies? Let's check in with Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky. What do you got for us, Stephen?
Well, George, always exciting things. And, you know, with all the wild weather around the nation and around the world, listeners, take notice of this. NASA and the NOAA organization has so many of these GOES satellites. They're standing, the simple explanation is the derivation is geostationary observational environmental satellites, simply weather satellites. But a new one was launched. It's GOES letter R. And why is that important? Because now, for the first time, you can go onto these websites and look at your local weather. It has two amazing instruments. One's called the Advanced Baseline Imager. What's that? It's a camera that, George, can scan the Earth in 5 minutes, and it can zoom into severe weather every 30 seconds in color. Totally amazing. And also, if that's not an amazing bit of science, the Global Lightning Mapper on there captures lightning as it happens continuously all over North America, and particularly the United States. But more people, George, will be looking at this new moon or wondering where it is this particular weekend, as people, particularly in the Eastern Hemisphere and all folks alike, welcome in the Chinese New Year. The official Chinese year would be 4715. This, all because of the dark of the moon, that beautiful new moon that occurs this Saturday, January the 28th. This year, for those following this, is the year of the fire rooster, and it lasts all the way until February of 2018. Chinese New Year is defined as the second new moon after the winter solstice. But George, in the live sky, so many things that people want to see, and hopefully they'll get out there and look. With the new moon this weekend, you can get a good view, no matter where you're listening, with clear skies, of the beautiful Milky Way in the winter. It's beautiful. You can see it.
I love it.
It scans mostly overhead. And both the planet Venus and Mars, exceptionally close, getting very close to a beautiful conjunction high in the southwest. Dr. Sky reminds everyone, always remember to keep your eyes to the sky.
Thank you, Dr. Sky. Appreciate it. Love his stories about space when he comes on every week. A Frenchman has been fined more than $1,000 in order to pay an additional $4,000 in damages to the family of an overweight boy that he publicly insulted on Facebook. Gosh, Well, on Wednesday, we're going to do a show on cyberbullying. It's something I've wanted to do for a long time, so make sure you're listening to that part of the program. All the programs. The appearance of fake news on websites and social media has inspired scientists to develop a vaccine to immunize people against the problem. University of Cambridge study devised psychological tools to target the fact distortion, as they call it. The researchers suggest preemptively exposing readers to a small dose of misinformation that can help organizations cancel out bogus claims. Stories, they say, on the election and things like that are some of the reasons. So we'll see what happens there. In a moment, Robert Young Pelton joins us. We're going to talk about fake news and other things going on around the planet next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast for the next 2 hours. We're going to be talking about fake news. We're going to be talking about events happening around this planet and how they affect all of us with our dear friend Robert Young Pelton. Robert Pelton, of course, has become an inspiration role model for the new generation of adventurers. He is an author, a number of his books, one included License to Kill, Hired Guns and the War on Terror. He's a filmmaker, photographer. He does it all. And Robert has trained Navy SEALs in survival, participated in secret special forces training, motivates young people to do meaningful things with their time on this planet. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. I look forward to you all the time, Robert. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
You know, the story I just had about fake news and what's happening all around the planet, I mean, is it all because of social networking? What has happened here?
Well, the easiest way to understand what we call fake news is the difference between entertainment and news. We find news very boring because it's made out of numbers and sometimes very balanced ideas. But entertainment is always, monkey escapes from zoo or something unbelievable, but we have to read the whole story and we click on it.
Why do people believe these things, Robert?
Well, you can believe anything you want. I mean, the world is made out of a variety of things. And one of the things that we have to understand is when we talk about news, we always think that the person that's talking to us has researched the facts and has a very balanced, calm idea of what he's telling you. But that's not what gets people excited. People like arguments. They like controversy. They like scandal and sensationalism. And once you get that click, that's how you monetize advertising. So these news organizations now structure their stories to attract those clicks and that income. And many of the people that have been caught being hoaxers make millions of dollars by carefully structuring stories to appeal to people.
How dangerous is it for people to really believe this fake news stuff?
Well, okay, so do you trust the media, first of all? I mean, we tend to spend a lot of time immersed in the media instead of talking to our friends or looking out the window. How many times do people go to their iPhone and say, "Oh, I wonder what the weather is," when it doesn't really matter? And if you watch the Weather Channel, when it rains, it's some extraordinary storm, or when it snows, it's a snowpocalypse, things like that. So we live in an environment of extremes.
Well, it's dangerous. We saw a lot of this pop up during this election. I think Hillary Clinton is blaming fake news for part of her defeat. What do you think of that?
Well, they're both right. I mean, I'm writing a story for Foreign Policy on fake news and hacking and all sorts of psyops, military-level activities that have influenced how people think. And when we look at things like Twitter or Facebook, what you notice inside those software programs are the ability to like something or retweet something or, put a heart on it or a frown or something. And that adds a magnifying effect. And what we don't realize is that in some of Donald Trump's tweets, for example, up to 80% of retweets were actually done by robots, and they were typically negative. So what that means is, let's say Donald Trump tweets something, and a computer scans people who are saying either negative or positive things, and then they retweet a negative thing, sometimes 6,000 times, and they do it just enough so they don't get caught
as a spammer. And these are real things happening to influence people's ideas.
Part of the push with fake news, of course, is that it grows because of social networking. In our older days of broadcasting, Robert, you know, we'd go with a story that we thought was correct. We'd investigate it. We'd do the best we could to verify facts, and then we went with it. And 99% out of the time, the story was accurate. I mean, something did happen. Somebody did die. These things occurred. Today, anybody could just send something out. I can't tell you how many stars have popped up on Facebook, for example, as dead, and they're very much alive. And people run with that. I mean, they had one on Sylvester Stallone that was all over the place that he had finally passed on. And Sly is very much around still.
But the mechanics of that is somebody says a star that's alive died. He gets a certain number of clicks, which then generates advertising revenue. So these people aren't doing it for fun. They're doing it for money.
Money, yeah.
And when you're in politics and your goal is to degrade the message or quality of a candidate, you're going to find what you think are the most salacious details, and you're going to start it in an area where maybe it's not the New York Times. You know, it looks like a legitimate news source. And then you're going to artificially bump it up so that it hits sort of a viral speed or velocity. And then people are going to assume because 150 people shared this or 300 people liked it, that it has validity. And then this is the core of fake news.
You are a patriot. You travel around the planet. You have love for country. You point out things that are going on that you don't like. But you tell it the way you see it, and you don't embellish it. WikiLeaks with Julian Assange pointed out some factors of government. What do you think WikiLeaks has done?
Well, the most damaging thing is the truth. I mean, you know, without any editorial comment, without any sort of slant in terms of how it's presented. And if I present somebody's entire email file, and if you take the time to read that entire file, you can actually form an opinion without somebody saying, oh, look at this, isn't that terrible?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what they'll say is, well, where's Donald Trump's emails? Where's the Republican, you know, emails to the Democratic emails? And this is where Hillary Clinton's people said, oh, you know, we were hacked by the Russians. Now, a fascinating thing in the research I'm doing for this story is that I'm digging deep into the world of hacking. And the DNC hired a company to dig to the bottom of how somebody got in their emails. It's quite obvious from reading the emails that they didn't use very good security. They actually told each other passwords.
Jeez.
Sometimes their passwords were close to the word password. But they said, oh, you know, they used this program, and these programs are linked directly to the KGB and to the FSB, and these are the GRU. These are Soviet-era sort of intelligence and military intelligence agencies. But in actual fact, they're just hacking software that you can buy at hacking conventions. So they colored this whole thing to look like this was a national threat, that Vladimir Putin, you know, woke up one day and said, let's hack into Hillary Clinton's email and let's make Donald Trump win, which is not the case. Now, that meme is being repeated by intelligence agencies, by news sources, but if you drill down into the actual data, you'll find the same sources for this information. In other words, it's not like it's independent technical analysis. It's actually repeating news stories. And I've come across this over and over again where it's called open source, where intelligence agencies actually use news stories to buttress intelligence findings.
When we come back in a moment, Robert, I want to get your reaction to what's happening now. The latest is U.S. investigators are scrutinizing the December phone calls between Mike Flynn, President Donald Trump's national security advisor, and the Russian ambassador to the U.S. as part of a much broader counterintelligence investigation. I want to get your take on that, and then we'll talk about some more issues And then in the second hour, we will take phone calls with Robert Young Pelton. Now, by the way, he just came back from Afghanistan, so let's get his take on what's going on there. Gosh, we've been there since 2001.
One of the perks of being a Coast Insider is that you can participate in our twice-monthly live chat sessions or read the transcripts later. George Norrie chats with insiders on the second Tuesday of the month, and a special guest is featured later in the month. Click the Coast Insider link on coasttocoastam.com to get started.
George Norrie back with you along with Robert Young Pelton. Robert, we're going on 16 years in Afghanistan. 16. Where's the exit plan?
We don't have one, and President Trump has been silent about Afghanistan. And I was just there. I met with the Commander General Nicholson and other people and the Afghan government. And we have a very sad situation where President Obama promised to shut down the war and almost got everybody out of there, but basically scraped all the programs away that supported the troops. So we have a sort of a skeleton crew there. And the Taliban is not winning. And the Afghan army is actually doing a good job of pushing back the Taliban, you know, with U.S. support. But it's in limbo. And it is something that we have to finish for good or for bad. You know, we lost a lot of people over there and we spent a lot of money. And the Afghans, on the whole, are very supportive of the U.S. effort to support them.
My numbers show that we're still around 10,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Is that accurate, do you think?
Yeah, that's about right. And then we have, you know, we have contractors. We have trainers that come over there and train up the army. But basically, we're at a stalemate because the Taliban is sort of halfway into a peace process, but is still fighting. And we're also fighting a counterterrorism war. You know, ISIS is in eastern Afghanistan, so we're fighting two wars, essentially, one against ISIS and then one to support the Afghan military. And I did 3 weeks of missions the last time I was there with a special forces team and Afghan commandos, and they're pretty competent. You know, you drop them by helo, they go in, they clear the village, they take out the Taliban, and that's enough to push them back. But it's a consistent, repetitive effort.
I am very interested in getting your definition of ISIS. Who are these people?
Well, ISIS is a brand. It's a cult, and it is sometimes as little as three or four people that go over as trainers and bring flags and teach people how to cut heads off and make videos, as in the area in the southern Philippines. And in some areas, it's all foreign volunteers, like in Libya. I was in Sirte, Libya, watching them kill ISIS. And most of those people are Tunisians that were brought in to bolster an existing jihadi group.
Mm-hmm.
In other areas, like Syria and Iraq, they actually have some, you know, very large troop formations, but they're slowly being killed off. And we let them grow for too long. And what happened is that they had these large empty areas that no one would fight them. And so now we've gotten serious about going in there, and we're using proxies. You know, we use special forces troops from Jordan and Britain and America and the UAE, and we use proxies, you know, so we have the locals fight them. But it's very, very brutal. It's house to house. ISIS brings their families. You literally have to call in airstrikes on the top floor while somebody's fighting on the bottom floor, and it takes months just to go one block and clear all these people out. And when they find them, they don't surrender, so they look like hamburger after they've been shot so many times.
And I mean, they're all over the place. They just keep coming from nowhere, don't they?
Well, here's the interesting thing. We now have what we call lone wolf attacks, where somebody with half a brain will say, oh, you know, I joined ISIS, or I pledged my allegiance to ISIS. And when you look at the person, you're thinking, this is just some angry kid who wanted to be in the news.
Who will either get killed or blows himself up, right?
Yeah, exactly. So these people aren't hardened terrorists. They have no political agenda. In many cases, they're not even Muslims. They're just people who want to be in the news. So they've created this sort of bad guy, I'm against everything. And a lot of that goes back to just how we communicate about ISIS. They were very masterful in putting out these films and images of brutally murdering people, and they scare people. But that's asymmetrical warfare or strategic communications. There aren't that many of them, but I bet you everybody in the world knows about ISIS and knows that they're bad people. So they've done a good job of communicating that they're just fearsome.
And they've used fake news, too.
That's exactly right. And the reality is that most people will remember some brutal video or a story about a brutal video, but they don't really understand the underpinnings of ISIS and their beliefs and their structure and their size. You know, for example, when I was in Libya, about 24 guys got in their trucks, drove from the suburbs, and drove around downtown Sabratha waving ISIS flags. They went into the police station, they shot a few people, cut their heads off, and then drove out of town.
Jeez.
Well, the entire world's media reported that ISIS had taken over Sabratha. And then a couple of weeks later, the U.S. dropped two 2,000-pound bombs in the suburbs, and the locals went down and shot them all. And that was the end of ISIS in Sabratha. So it's not a very big threat, but they have global, managed to get global publicity for that one little gun run.
Who arms these people, Robert?
In many cases, they have money. So the key to ISIS is funding. You know, they had a lot of money when they controlled the smuggling business in Kurdistan. In other words, the Iraqi oil that goes out to Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases, they're able to ambush government forces, which are typically less trained and less eager to fight, so they can grab these weapons. In Libya, there's literally tons and tons and tons of munitions, just like Iraq, you know, huge bunkers full of shells and weapons and bullets. So they tend to be funded by existing things. And then you have certain individuals in Saudi Arabia and Qatar and the Middle East.
And the Emirates.
That support these groups as sort of an insurance policy. And one of the reasons why you don't see a lot of terrorist attacks in places like the UAE and Qatar is because there's an understanding that that's sort of a neutral zone. So they have support, not necessarily from the governments themselves, but within certain individuals mm-hmm. and wealthy patrons.
Does that include Abu Dhabi and Dubai? Because I am convinced that there's a hands-off policy there. It is those two areas are as decadent and Western as any Arab area, and yet nothing happens there.
Well, obviously they have a large security apparatus, but at the same time, it's also a financial center. And any terrorist group, you know, when I used to link up with these groups, I used to go to Istanbul, or I used to go to Abu Dhabi or UAE, because that's where they don't, I shouldn't use it on the radio show, but that's, you don't go to the bathroom where you eat, I guess, is a pleasure.
That is probably as well said as you can on the show.
What we have now is a transnational group of people who can shift their allegiances and their names and their flags. And if you go to Syria, you'll find that most of the moderate rebels that we were supposed to be supporting, when they found that they weren't getting their weapons from the U.S., simply shifted to the winning sides because Qatar and other people were flying in large amounts of weapons. So that's how they all became al-Nusra or more militant groups.
What do they want, Robert? Is this all because we support Israel? There's got to be more to this.
No, we're seeing a massive change in the Arab world, and it's caused by population, it's caused by lack of jobs, it's caused by
hate.
A sense that the government and the population is controlled by corrupt, wealthy people, and in many cases that's true. So things like Arab Spring, people find out that the ability to overthrow a dictator is actually quite easy. And they rise up and their country descends into turmoil, and then it goes back to the old tribalism. You know, in Libya,
yeah.
You have three countries now, and they're divided by tribes. Now, they can get along just fine or they can fight each other. But what you're seeing is a degradation of the colonial structures into tribal, religious, or ethnic lines, which sometimes is a more natural structure for some regions because they were artificially put together by European countries.
Was it a mistake to lose Muammar Gaddafi and have him die?
Well, he was going down anyways. I mean, a lot of people get Libya wrong because we didn't overthrow Gaddafi.
No.
Gaddafi was being overthrown. And we came in and sort of tipped him over. But we definitely flattened most of his infrastructure, degraded almost all of his armies, but we had no plan. There was no reason for us to stay around in Libya because the Libyans insisted that they would take it from there. And it didn't work that way. And we still have a civil war coming in Libya. You've probably read about Eric Prince providing support for the UAE, who supports Haftar, who is the guy aligned with Russia in the east. Well, he is going to now clash with the more traditional or fundamentalists in the west because they don't want outside influences. So we were prevented from going into Libya because Libyans insist, as they should, that they can fix things, but they actually didn't.
Why can't we find the second in command of Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri? Why can't we go get him?
Once again, the structures of most groups are not linear like a corporation. The president isn't the boss, and the vice president isn't number two. They're run by shuras. They're run by groups of people who make decisions. And, you know, bin Laden was more of a figurehead, like Colonel Saunders, I call him, than actually the operational head. So Zawahiri does run a lot of the logistics and payments and takes care of the foreign fighters, but he is by no means the most important person in Al-Qaeda.
Do you think we know where he is?
Well, he typically operates in the area around Miram Shah. I went looking for him in 2003 and located him pretty quickly in Miram Shah, where most of the Arabs fled. So he's still in Pakistan, where most of the Arabs fled from Afghanistan.
So the Pakistanis have got to know where he is.
Well, of course, the ISI has always played both sides against the middle.
Yeah.
So it's not a secret that we found bin Laden there and found many other members of Al-Qaeda, also the ones involved in the 9/11 attacks.
All right, Robert, what's going on here with Mike Flynn, the president's national security advisor, and these phone calls to the Russian ambassador as part of some investigation here?
Well, Mike Flynn, who I know from Afghanistan, is a very sharp guy who went in to try to fix the DIA and was basically forced out because he wanted to get rid of a lot of bureaucratic deadwood. And Mike Flynn, has an extraordinary record in hunting down terrorists when he worked for General McChrystal in Iraq and also again in Afghanistan. So he started his own company, which was an intel company, and he was busy all around the world talking to people, setting up meetings. So he made a phone call, and I think their aircraft had just crashed on its way to Syria, and there was a band on the aircraft, so he called the ambassador, and then later on he was trying to set up a link to Donald Trump. And the people that I know inside the current administration say that Flynn is a very calming effect on President Trump because he's a very experienced, capable man.
And Trump respects him.
Of course, and this is the interesting thing about some of his appointees is that they seem controversial. If you go back a few years and look at what they've done in the military or the corporate world, they're actually very well-respected people.
Well, it's
so tempest in a teapot.
Is this investigation going to fester and grow, in your opinion?
No, because this is what's fascinating to me. The FBI seems to be the wild card these days because, first of all, they're not even supposed to comment on investigations, but somebody somewhere said, oh, you know, Mike Flynn called the Russian ambassador. And believe it or not, the Russians actually aren't the enemies of the U.S. But we don't get along very well, but he was trying to set up a discussion with the incoming president.
Is that illegal to make a phone call to the Russian ambassador?
Well, don't forget, as a private citizen, he can call whoever he wants. He's not representing the government.
I would think so.
Meeting.
I mean, remember the Reagan days? There were a lot of calls to Iran when those hostages were there.
Right, and they used businessmen to do it. I mean, this is not unusual for people to use relationships. And someone was telling me the story about when General Flynn was in Russia, and apparently he spoke at an event. And then when he sat at dinner, Vladimir Putin walked in and sat next to him. He had no idea that the president of Russia would be sitting next to him, but I'm pretty sure that Vladimir Putin admires Flynn and his background and what he's done. So suddenly he became, you know, a tool of Russia. And then Mike Flynn is not a tool of anyone.
So Robert, why isn't the media giving Donald Trump an opportunity to be presidential and do what he is. Yes, he has said some stupid things. He has tweeted some stupid things. But
well, this is absolutely critical to understand. Donald Trump doesn't need the media. Donald Trump talks to the American population through tweets and through speeches. He may not make sense. He may sound like he's crazy. He may be, you know, changing his mind. He may sound like a 12-year-old. But he doesn't care about the media, and you're supposed to play the game. Now, remember the very cozy relationship that the media is supposed to have with the president.
Yes.
You know, imagine President Kennedy. Why did no one report on Marilyn Monroe sneaking in?
Right, in his conversing around in the pool and everything else.
So FDR was in a wheelchair, you know, and you weren't supposed to show him in the wheelchair. So the president is supposed to have a symbiotic relationship with the media so they can also manipulate the media. So when they want to push a message hard, they'll say, okay, guys, I need you to get this story out there. I remember weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
Yep.
It was part of that cozy arrangement. But now Donald Trump is basically ignoring the media.
Is that smart?
Well, we're in a new generation here. I don't necessarily watch that much media because they start lecturing me on what I should think about the story instead of giving me the facts. I have the internet. I can read 10 stories and pick what I want out, and I can ignore all the editorialization. So most people don't sit slavishly and watch a continuous stream of media reporting because most of all, it's probably mostly garbage because it's the same story every 30 minutes. And secondly, most of the stuff you see in the, what they call the mainstream media is put there because of either press releases or because of, you know, events that should be covered even though there's really nothing to report on. So the media, instead of reinventing itself and going out there and doing deep dives, which some do an excellent job of, is simply reporting on itself. They're literally interviewing each other about what the media thinks about Trump because he's not there in the room.
Well, you know, today he signed 3 executive orders. Barack Obama, in his 8 years, signed a zillion executive orders. The media today reported on every one of them, all 3 of them. And I cannot remember the time that they ever reported on any executive order signed by any other president.
Well, I think it's clear that some elements of the media are violently opposed to the presidency of Donald Trump. Others are very supportive of it. So we now live in a partisan environment where people literally state their opinion about the president and then report the story. So I hope at some point people throttle that back and start doing the analytical, background, factual reporting that's required instead of trying to convince us that Donald Trump is a bad person or that he's a good person or that Hillary Clinton should have won the election but she didn't, and just focus on the facts. There's a lot of things that have to be done in this country that don't require partisan bickering.
So where's Rudy Giuliani during all of this?
So Rudy's part of some weird 80s thing. And part of the article I'm writing about is a real-time conversation about people watching other people hack into his website. This was literally hours after he was announced as an advisor on cybersecurity.
That's funny.
Some of these people, he doesn't technically have a job per se. He's just like gets to ride in the van with the band, you know? So there's a lot of people that are part of the Trump administration that I think it's just favors. I think they're just paying back favors.
Yeah, that could be too. Well, Robert, stay with us. We're going to take phone calls with you next hour as we talk about fake news, things that are happening around this planet. Go to the phone because it's your turn next with Robert Young-Pelton right here on Coast to Coast AM.